Hey everybody, this is Jimmy Corain, and before we start today's episode, I want to share some good news with you. I will be teaching my Artist Look Comedy Weekend Summer Intensives in person in Chicago on the weekend of August 6th and 7th. This workshop is for seasoned improvisers who are looking for a new approach to their improv. I limit this to 10 people. For more information and to register, go to my website at jimmycorain.com. That's jimmycorain.com.
Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Oh, Jim.
Welcome. Come on in. Don't be shy. Take a seat. Put on your headphones or however you're listening to this podcast and welcome, 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 welcome to another great episode of Improv Nerd. If you don't know who I am your host, Jimmy Corain. Our guest today is Patty Stiles. She is a world-renowned teacher of improvisation, and she is a world-renowned improviser touring all over the world. She has written a brand new book called Improvise Freely, Throw Away the Rulebook and Unleash Your Creativity. We talked to her about why she decided to write this book. We also talked about some very important concepts and how she reframes them for us, like yes and starting in the middle and asking questions. I get to improvise with Patty Stiles, which is so exciting. And we also do some exercises that I think will help you, but hopefully you'll be able to use them as well and find them as helpful as I did. So I'm very excited to get to this episode because Patty gives us such great information that will help you as an improviser. I just want to say, before we get to this episode, last week, I turned 58. I had a birthday party. And I know some of you are surprised. You're like, really? I thought Jimmy was in his early 40s. I know I look it, but no, I turned 58. And I actually had, in the month, I had three parties to celebrate 58, which you can do. And I have a lot of gratitude for my friends, you know, because when I started in improv, I was just kind of like, I just wanted to be famous. And I think the older you get, or the older I get, and as people that you started out with also pass away and they die, that's what pass away means, is die, in case you didn't know, I start to really appreciate my friends and my family. So, and of course, I appreciate you for listening. So you're going to love this episode. It's just so much fun. I think we do like three games or something, or exercises or improv. And it was just so much fun to talk to Patty because I'd known her reputation for years. And it was so much fun to improvise with her. Here it is, the Patty Stiles episode. Enjoy.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
Patty Stiles, thank you for being our guest on Improv Nerd.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's great to meet you and it's great to be here.
All right, so you started improvising back in 1983 and you worked with Keith Johnstone at Loose Moose Theater in Calgary, Alberta. And you have been, since then, you're a director, a teacher, an improviser, now a writer, or a published author, I should say. And you've taught all around the world. Let's talk about your new book, Improvising Freely, Throw Away the Rulebook and Unleash Your Creativity. Why did you decide to write this book?
A lot of reasons. Primarily, I was seeing globally students being trapped in improvisation. Something that I find so freeing, so open, so malleable, so exciting. I would see students walk in going, how do I do it? How do I do it right? What do I need to do? What is the right way to do this? Which was a shock because for me, you walk in and you discover. The whole joy of it was you didn't know what was going to happen in the workshop and in the show. That's kind of the call to the form, is we don't know. But students would be saying in scenes, so what do you want me to do so I do it right? I was like, what? Or I would say to a student, can you ask this question? And they'd say, no, you want me to break a rule? I can't do that. It's like, what do you mean you can't do that? This is pretend. This is imagination. This is storytelling. Where did the can and can't, right and wrong, do and don't, where did that come from? Because that wasn't in the language with working with Keith. If Keith had you do something and someone in the class said, well, what about this? He'd go, let's try it.
Were you seeing that? I'm sorry. Were you seeing that more in the States than you were in, say, overseas?
Yes. Yeah. And then I started seeing it more in groups overseas that were working directly with groups in the States. And groups that were going back and forth to festivals in the US, the language was transitioning. For a long time, I just went, well, it's a different philosophy. It's a different school of thought. It's just a different way of doing it. I'm not in the position to say what's right or wrong. And then I had students starting to cry. And I would see people in anxiety. And I'd see people in groups fighting. And then I started seeing people use it to manipulate students, where teachers and organizations were using it as a source of control and discipline, and to be able to say, you are this, you are good, and you are not. And that was a game changer. When it went from—
They were using it to judge the ability of the improviser based on a set of rules.
They were using it to control the improviser by saying that we had the right to say if you're good or not. So if someone wanted something so much and you want to achieve, you're in a state of vulnerability to your teachers. And if teachers use, you know, rules and control to say, you're not good enough, but I know how to make you good, there's a conditioning there that's not healthy. And I was starting to see that. And then that was crossing over into inappropriate relationships. It was crossing over into schools and organizations using it as a way to keep students paying for classes. And basically, some organizations lie to students, where they say, you will get to the main stage, or you will become a part of the main company if you do these 20 courses. But the reality is there's only a certain amount of stage time and there's only a certain amount of roles. And when you think of how many people have gone through the courses, that promise can't be true because the stage doesn't have 5,000 people on it.
For those improvisers who have learned the rules approach, that's where I came from, certainly. And why is it important to throw out the rules? Now, this is for if you're improvising, why would it be important to throw those out?
Because a rule by nature dictates behavior. And we're operating in a creative field. So we need to be free to follow impulse. So, and everybody would agree with that. Improvisation is about impulse. Well, if you have a rule, are you following impulse or the rule? Because if you're in a moment, you've got a choice. Are you going to follow your gut feeling or are you going to follow the rule? Even if the rule is opposite to your gut feeling. Well, there's the problem. Because if you have everybody following rules, then the end result is going to be similar. Right? You need the painter that goes, I'm going to play with this color or form or this style. You need the musician who goes, You know, can we make four cellos sound like heavy metal? You need people who are going to break the rules to discover the new, to allow the new, to step into the true unknown. Rules do not give you the unknown. Rules give you a manageable structure in which to play in. That's different.
So we're going to get into how you've redefined some for the people that have learned the rules, how you redefine them. But let's say, you know, someone like me who's been, you know, inundated with the rules. How do you, as you read your book, how do you actually in your head let go of that?
Well, I think the rules, for me, it's going, okay, where did this rule come from? Why is there this rule? And some of the rules actually come from a piece of information that is useful. So, for example, the rule don't ask questions, right? Now, asking questions in a scene can put the responsibility always on your partner, right? Yes, that can be a part of it. But asking questions can also trigger your partner's imagination and can have the character reveal. So the question itself is not the problem. It's why are we asking questions? Are we shirking our responsibility in the scene? Are we afraid of making a commitment? Are we, you know, basically wimping? That's one thing. And are the questions we're asking useful for the story of the scene? And when I say story, that could be comedic or dramatic or both, right? Because I see a comedic scene is still a story. So it's how do we use that tool and why are we gravitating towards that? So in a class, if a teacher said, don't ask questions as a technique, let's do a scene where we don't ask questions. Great. Having the experience of not asking questions is useful because you're using other tools. But to remove questions from conversation entirely on stage is a bit idiotic. Because we always ask questions in life. How can you do a first date without asking a question? Right? Because if you have one character who just talks about themselves, it's kind of the most boring first date ever. So the tools, the rules come from a place where there is a useful piece of information. And that useful piece of information is a tool. A philosophy, an approach. There's something to be learned there. Learn that and have that in your tool belt. But we don't need a rule to understand that sometimes questions aren't useful.
How in your book do you redefine yes and?
So yes and is interesting because it's not something that I was taught. So this is one of those kind of different streams of improvisational thought. We were taught acceptance, right? Accept the offers.
And what? Give me an example of what accepting the offer would be.
Well, depends on the offer. So when we use yes and, usually people are saying yes and they're saying yes and in response to a verbal offer. So it's a verbal action you've been conditioned to do in response to a verbal offer. So it's setting a pattern of this is how you do it. Where for me, accepting the offer is first, what are all the offers at play? So before a scene even starts, the lighting state is an offer. Is the scene starting with a blank stage or is there already one, two, three, four people on stage? Is there a chair or no chair? Did we get a suggestion from the audience or not? Is there a piece of music? All of these things are offers and need to be accepted because the audience is embracing what they're seeing, what they're feeling, what they're hearing. And if I ignore all of that and wait for the first verbal offer, I'm not in sync with the audience. I'm not in sync with the other improvisers in the scene, the lighting person, the musician. I'm waiting for a cue because I've been conditioned that until someone says something, I don't say yes and.
So let's take us here in this space and just as an example. So in terms of accepting an offer. Now, I could just start with a statement, but before we begin that, what is going on here that I need to be aware of before I give you an offer?
Well, when I look at you, mm-hmm. I'm seeing your face. I'm seeing the situation of your body. I'm mm-hmm. seeing that you're wearing a collared shirt. I see that there's a microphone just slightly in the corner and you've got headphones on. Also, the headphones have cords. I see that behind you, it's dark. So there's light here, there's darkness there. And I see that there's photos behind you on the wall. All of this is potential. I also see your facial expression, that's potential, the angle of your shoulders and your body. All of these are offers. And these offers can be accepted and, you know, valued or used individually or collectively. So I can go, right, a guy on Zoom in a Zoom meeting. Or I can go, what if it's a horror story because of the darkness behind you? What if the pictures behind you start moving and talking? You know, what if the pictures, you know, start making faces behind you? So you're doing Zoom, but all these family photos behind you are making faces. What if the microphone keeps falling over, right? What if the cord keeps getting tangled? So there's so many possibilities within the frame of what I see. And if I'm conditioned to say yes and verbally to your verbal offer, am I seeing the possibility of the darkness behind you? Am I seeing the possibility of the photos? Am I seeing the possibility of the microphone? Because those are also possibilities. Those are also offers I can accept.
So if you were going to give me an offer and I just accept it, right? I don't have to yes and it. I just have to agree to it, correct?
So accepting is using the offer within the context of the story. Mm-hmm. So saying yes may not be the way to accept it. Because sometimes no can be the best way to accept an offer, right? So it depends on the offer and within the context of the story on how you accept it and how you use it. So if I don't know, if I was, let's say I was the voice of the microphone going, Jimmy, come closer to me. Come closer. Yes. Come closer. Pa, 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 pa. Oh, that's it. Whisper me, sweet. Oh, I love when you whisper. Say that again.
What do you want?
I want you, Jimmy.
Me?
But yes.
You're just a microphone.
Oh. Oh, I see. You only define relationships to human form.
No, I didn't mean to reject you. You've never talked to me like that before.
Are you rejecting me or are you?
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Your love for me.
No, my wife is in the other room.
Touch me.
This is just confusing.
Touch me.
Yeah.
Touch me.
What?
Touch me. Touch me. Touch me.
I don't know what you're saying.
Touch me.
Oh, touch you. I didn't know what you were saying.
That's okay.
I just want to make sure she's...
Oh, that's perfect.
Okay.
So we could play that scene.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's non-naturalism, but non-naturalism is a possibility, just like naturalism, just like comedy, just like drama.
Well, I think what I liked about that for me was certainly the freedom of asking questions, because that was my opening line, but also using my confusion about this, like, oh, it's a microphone. And I normally don't like to play real, but to use that and then be in relationship with the microphone and call out my confusion or like, you're a microphone. Okay, great. Ooh. But then accept that this is what's going on. You know, that to me frees me up as an improviser, just to speak honestly in the character and also, you know, going along with the agreement of it.
Absolutely. And if you looked at the microphone, you played the reality of the microphone is talking to me. I can't have a relationship with a microphone. Mm-hmm. Right. So then for me, I'm going, in the story, the audience wants to see you changed. Because, you know, great stories, great comedy are about characters being changed and affected by what's happening in their world. You know, you slip on a banana peel and you can either have a comedic reaction, it doesn't hurt you, or you have a dramatic reaction, you break your hip. But you still are changed by slipping on the banana peel. Because that's what the audience wants when you slip on the banana peel. So in this, if you go, I can't do this, you're not human, then there's the offer. It's like, your resistance to me is I'm not human. So can I make myself human? Can I seduce you? Can I get you to touch me? Because the audience wants to see you be changed. They either want to see you give in or fight back. And if you say no, and you push me out of the way, then, you know, I would try to get back into the scene because the audience wants to see you tortured by me.
Yes, I think a lot of people want that. I think too, doing that scene for me is if I'm in it, I'm invested in it emotionally, I can go anywhere with it. And that's something that I try to get my students to do. It's like, let's emotionally get invested first, and the words and everything else will follow. This brings something up too, as we talk about the rules, which is your thesis, I really think, in this book, about making mistakes. And I don't think that you can't get better unless you make mistakes. And you talked about this a little about, especially when people have the rules in their heads, how do you get people or improvisers to enjoy making mistakes?
Yeah, it is challenging because we have so much around us in life saying that mistakes are wrong, right? And, you know, we get conditioned in school very quickly about that. You know, when we're on a grading system and you get rewarded if you get a high mark and you get penalized if you have a low mark. So you don't get rewarded for having an experience, like you get a math question, you go, what if algebra was this? The teacher's not going to go, wow, okay, you've got a really clever brain and I see what you're working with. But that's not the question asked. You just get wrong. It's wrong. You lose a mark. Then you take that test home and your parents are unhappy. Then you might miss a year because so the consequences of mistakes are high. And we're taught that early. And part of that is embarrassment and, being removed from the pack or the group or being isolated, being judged. So we fear making mistakes because of all of that. Judgment, letting people down, being removed from the group, embarrassment. So it's actually hard to give permission to make mistakes when people are coming in with this. So we need to make mistakes fun and acceptable and understand them and find a joy in them. To be good natured about making a mistake. That way when we're on stage, we're not making moves, making choices to protect ourselves from making a mistake. We're making moves and choices and scenes for the scene. And if we make a mistake, we know our partners will support us and we have a way of dealing with it so we don't feel crushed. So Keith has a lot of exercises, for example, playing word at a time if you feel stress or pressure, you just yell, again, and you start a whole new scene.
So a word at a time, one word story, are you talking about?
Yes.
So it'd be like once, and then you'd say a word, and then if you feel stressed, can we just do a little sample for people that would be listening and want to understand this? Because I love this concept. So we're starting a story. Once
there
was
a
big
bear
and
it
ate
me
again. Okay, then we would all yell again, and then we'd start a new story.
Yep.
Wow. I like that.
The again is joyous. If you yell it, your partner joins in. There is no judgment on the again. There is no, wait, let's talk about why. You just say it, you start a new story.
There's also a term in improvisation about starting in the middle of a scene. Patty, what if this is a very common thing? We don't want to start scenes where two characters are meeting for the first time.
Ah, that's because we're starting scenes in gossip and negotiation and exposition. And watching two people just talk is not very interesting unless the gossip leads to interaction. So you can start a scene with two characters sitting and talking, but it needs to go somewhere. So if that's your platform, and this is the language that that Keith would use for narrative work, instead of, you know, the who, what, where, or start in the middle, we would talk about platform. So whatever's happening at the start of the scene, that's your platform to the scene. So if the platform starts with two people sitting having coffee and they're gossiping, talking about the weather or their kids at school or whatever, this is gossip. So in the offers of the platform, we've got two people in a relaxed state, coffee shop. So coffee shop has its, regular meetings, usually daytime, that sort of thing. What they're talking about. So if they're talking about the weather, children, work, relationships, shopping, the movies, whatever they're talking about, their status and their emotional state. So there's already a lot of offers in the platform, right? Each offer has what Keith calls the circle of expectation or the circle of possibilities. And each one of those circles are possibilities for the story. So in that platform of two people, coffee, what are they gossiping about?
Well, why don't we try it? Should we just go ahead and try it?
Sure.
And see? Yeah. And then we can break it down. Okay. So, okay.
Great. Oh, I love chai lattes.
Yeah.
It's funny though how the difference between food, you know, so you have food in the country that it's from and it's got a completely different flavor, you know, because people change their recipes to suit the market they're in.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, why, like, I haven't got my coffee yet.
Oh.
There's no one back there. Like, they gave you your coffee, and then I don't know if they are on break, but there's no one back there. Do you think my order was too complicated?
Well, you said there's no one back there.
No, there's
like,
no
there
one.
Is no one.
Should
we go make
like,
your coffee?
Pardon?
Shall we go back there and make your coffee? Come on.
I know you always think I'm such a, you know, like I don't take any risks. Okay, fine. But if we get caught, you got to take a lot of the blame.
I'll take it all. I'll take all the blame. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
All right. Adventure awaits.
Yeah, adventure awaits. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. All right. Then we could sneak in and start making the coffee. So in our platform, two people talking about lattes, food, coffee, the environment, you notice there's no one back there. Right? Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, hang on, that's a promise to the audience. Up until that point, everything we talked about was normal. But the fact that there's no one at the counter, there's no one there, that's a bit unusual. It's not that there wasn't a lineup. It wasn't that they were ignoring us. There was no one there. So there's a mystery there for the audience. Why isn't there anybody there? So then our talking about it, because we could sit and talk about there's no one there, and that just keeps more gossip. So how do we allow the offer to move the gossip to interaction? And interaction starts when someone is changed, because when you're changed, that creates an action in the scene. So when I said, do you want to go back there and make your coffee? You were changed.
Right. But I resisted, because in my head, I'm like, well, that's not very believable. But I'm like, okay, that's my honest response. Eventually I'm going to have to give in, or the scene is not going to go anywhere. And or is it? I mean, could the scene go where I'm like, I'm not going back there?
Absolutely. So if you say, I'm not going, and I go, okay, and I go, so okay, you're sitting out at
let's,
the table.
Let's do that. Let's pick it up from there. I'm not going.
Fine. What did you order?
It was a caramel mocha latte, a skim.
I'll be right back.
Wait a sec. Wait.
Oh, I'm sorry, officer. No, I was just making my friend No! Help me! Help!
Officer, I'm with her. Okay.
So I'm still trying to change you.
Right. And how are you trying to change me there? It's very obvious how you're trying to change me in the first one. How are you trying to change me there?
By me getting caught, you changed. Because you reacted to what I was doing.
Right. I was ready to help you get out of the situation.
Right. And because you had said, if you get in trouble, you have to take the blame. Mm-hmm. I was taking the blame. So I was kind of reverting to that. Now I could have, when the officer came in, said, look, it's not my fault, it's his. That would also change you. Because I lied to you, and now the cop is going to look at you.
You know what's interesting about this? And I'm going to go back to the first choice. For me, the first choice was more fun to play, because that's not something that I would typically do in an improv scene or in life. And I think that's a good, I don't know, for me, that's a good indication. Like, you know what? Why don't you go with that? And it was also the easier or fun, more fun choice to play, you know, which is, it's good. For me to remember this. In your book, you talk about give the audience a good time. And people that listen to this podcast, they're all over the world. They're in different markets, different parts of the globe. Some people are in major cities where they have a lot of access to improv, some not as much. What are some practical things people can do to make sure that the audience has a good time?
Well, it can start with simply how you greet them when they arrive at your space. You know, we have to remember that when people make a choice to come to our show, that's a leap of faith. You know, people are taking their hard-earned money and they're coming to give it to you. You know, we shouldn't take that for granted. You know,
so how should they, how, what's a good way of greeting an audience?
It depends on what type of show you're doing and what kind of atmosphere you want to create. So, at the Loose Moose, we would have you know, the improvisers in a theater sports show, we would also be taking tickets, selling tickets, serving the bar, being behind concession, chatting with the audience. You know, if you saw someone last week, you go, oh, I like your offer, and just make it a nice environment. Make people feel comfortable. They want to be there.
As if you're hosting a party, almost as if you're hosting a party.
Absolutely. Because we're trying to create an experience with that audience. We're trying to create a moment in time that we all share together, which is different than come in and watch my brilliance. Right? Which for some improv groups, that's the vibe they want. That's their creative choice. For us, it was, if we're going to ask you for offers, we don't want you to feel that you're in competition with us or that you have to out-clever us. Just play with us, you know, and we want you to feel safe that you can play with us, that if we ask you to come down on stage, that you're not going to feel that we're going to throw you to the wolves. We want you to feel like you'd like to come down because this looks like the best thing in the world to do, and wouldn't it be fun to try it? Also, we're trying to create an environment where we're removing the status and the judgment, so we can make mistakes on stage and we can have a laugh at mistakes. And, you know, for this hour or 2 hours that we're together, the way the normal world functions doesn't come into this space. You know, we're not theater gods and you're the lowly audience. We're people in a space sharing this moment of creativity together. We're all having the same aha moments together. And let's enjoy that. Let's figure out what that is. In a way, it's creating the same environment that you would when you welcome students to a class. You know, let's be here now. And well, there's a lot of ways you can do that.
Well, it takes I think a lot of improvisers, I know I do, there's a fear, there's almost a fear of the audience. It could be antagonistic. I mean, how many times have, you know, we all done shows and we blame the audience, you know, or we try to win over the audience. And what you're suggesting is, let's accept at the beginning, we're all in this together, you know?
Absolutely. So, what time you have your show will play a part in who comes or who doesn't come. How you advertise your show is going to play a part. So if your advertising is really aggressive, that's going to attract certain people and, you know, repel other people. How you greet them at the door, the type of music that you're playing, the level of music that you're playing, the lighting in the space, can they sit comfortably or are they standing on a cold concrete floor?
What you're wearing? Because I noticed improvisers in the States, sometimes it's, you know, they've just come from the beach.
If you're charging, you know, $30, $40, $50 a ticket, you should take some time and put some clothes on that's going to look worthy of that ticket price. If you're charging $5 and it's in a garage and you've got people sitting on beach blankets, okay, maybe that's appropriate. Everything we do is an offer to the audience. And every offer has a circle of expectations. So if they come into a space and the chairs are uncomfortable and the room is cold and the music is loud and obnoxious, what are the offers you're giving them? What information are you giving them, and how are they going to feel? But people don't tend to think about that. But we would get notes on that all the time at Loose Moose, because Keith, working at the Royal Court Theater and being a playwright, that was all a part of the experience. You know, we would, you know, walk around and sit in different seats in the audience to understand the eye line of the audience. Because if you're on stage performing, but you don't know what that person over there is seeing, how can you do your job on stage? Because you don't know the physical picture that they're getting. We would test our voice. right? Can I bounce my voice off the back wall? Okay, good, then I can be heard. If I can't do that, then I need to do the vocal warm-up and I need to prep myself so I can. And there's so many improvisers that walk into a space and they just go, oh, my job is to be on stage and do my funnies. But they don't actually look at the space and go, what are the offers of this space? Or what are the obstacles of this space? And what is the experience the audience is going to have in this space? And if you want to create a nice experience, you kind of have to know those things.
So we've talked about the beginning of the show and prepping the space for the now about after the show. And I really liked you discuss in a chapter about giving notes after a show. And can you tell us why it's valuable, or it was valuable for you and still is probably as a director, to give notes to cast?
When we're students, when we're in an improv class and we go, oh, I'm a student, I'm in the position of learning, we crave feedback from our teachers, right? How many students come up to you and say, oh, can I have some extra feedback? Or is there anything else you've seen? Because we know through that reflection and that outside eye, we're going to get a piece of information and perspective we're not getting in the scene. But in that moment of life, we also go, oh, I don't know everything. And the person I'm working with has information that would be useful. Somewhere along the way, improvisers go, oh, now I know it. And I don't need that information anymore. And I think that's really a dangerous place. Because how can we say we know an art form that's in constant evolution?
Right. So there's two points that you make in the book that I totally think is important. One is the length of the note session after the show.
People love to drag out note sessions because it becomes all about, let me tell you what I think. And that's not the point of a note session. The note session is, have I observed anything that I can share with you that's going to help you improve? Right? So it's not what I would have done, what I would have liked to have seen, my great idea. It's, hey, Jimmy, in that scene, your volume was down. That's all you need to hear, right? You keep the note short. And there's been different ways of doing notes that I've had. So some groups don't have access to their space for a long time after a show. So you might just say, right, we're going to do 10 minutes, 15 minutes notes. We strike the stage, everybody come in, you sit down. One person's going to do notes. They're going to read through their notes. At 15 minutes, we're done. There's no discussion. There's no fighting back. Just take the note. You don't have to agree with it. That's fine. And afterwards, in the bar or the cafe or the restaurant, wherever you go, you can have a chat. But for right now, just hear it. Just be in a place where you're willing to get perspective. That's all. At Loose Moose, you know, we'd sit down. Someone had been writing a list of scenes in the show. And we'd go, okay, the opening of the show. Any comments? And anybody at any level, so you didn't have to be a senior performer. You could be a beginner. You could be up in the booth. You could be the host. You know, you could even be the ticket taker. If anybody had anything they thought would be useful for us to learn and grow, you could give that note. But we didn't get into big discussions and debates about the notes. We just heard it. We just took it on board. And the challenging thing about the length of time is two things. One, people wanting to display their ego about everything that they know. And two, everybody wanting to defend their choices and what happened to explain it. Mistakes happen. Things can be improved. We don't need to defend what we've done. We're a team. It's okay. You know, if someone says, don't think your character was needed in that scene, they're not attacking you. It's just a piece of information.
Well, and the other point that you bring up is you don't have to agree with the notes. I know if you're giving notes, I've been wrong, or a student or a performer will say, oh, this is this and this. I'm like, I made a mistake, or, take what you like and leave the rest,
Absolutely.
I think a big thing too, is what, tips would you give to groups that don't have a director? When you were at Moose, you had a director. A lot of these groups now don't have directors, and, what's the best way so people's feelings don't get hurt, or fights break out, or.
Yeah, which is really problematic. I was also going just to wrap up with the notes. If you have a culture of rules and right and wrong, notes become more problematic because people are framing everything in what's right. So if someone says, that scene didn't work, someone could say, well, that's because so-and-so asked a question, which may not be why the scene didn't work. Right? So they're looking for logic within the rules to defend. At Loose Moose, even though we had Keith as the artistic director, we worked in a way to not have him kind of on some, high altar, on a throne. So when we were doing notes and we were reading through the list, Keith would only speak if he had something to say. Otherwise, anybody in the room could share their opinion and their point of view. And I think that's really important. If you're going to work collaboratively, then everybody has to feel safe to have their point of view and their perspective. Because if you don't, how are you going to have a collaborative rehearsal process if people in the room are afraid of contributing? When a group forms, I think it's really important that the group has discussions about what are their creative objectives? What is the frame that they're working within? Because a lot of the problems with notes and the arguments and so forth is people not in alignment with what they're doing. So one person might be going, this scene is going to be a little bit more, of a dramatic scene, and we're going to really kind of just nestle into the nuances of the characters, and then someone comes in with a killer button line and there's a huge laugh. So the players that were going, ooh, nuance, tension, moment, feel thwarted by the gag. But the person that did the gag got the laugh, which was the point of the gag, so they feel they've done what they were supposed to do. Within that, you've got two different creative objectives. So they can argue over what's right or wrong, but the truth is they're not in alignment as to what the show is and how they're going to work. If the show is a variety show, then a scene that's nuanced and slow needs to breathe, needs to have its place, because as a company, you've gone, this is a variety show and that's adding variety. If it's in trouble, then maybe you come in with the gag or the button. If it needs help, fine. But if it's fine, allow the variety. If you're in a comedy show or you're doing bar prov and it's all fast, then that nuanced scene does not fit the frame of what you've agreed to do as a group, nor does it fit the frame that you've given the audience as to why they're there. So coming in with the button and the gag is actually helpful, because it's realigning everybody to the framework of the show. But the company needs to kind of understand what their frames are, because then that gives you a structure for your conversations.
We've got to wrap this up. This has been great, but we always ask, we always end the podcast with the same question. What's one piece of advice you'd give to an improviser starting out today?
Wow. One piece. I always seize up on these things when people say, what's your favorite food? And I go, oh, but I like all of this as well. Improvisation is a joy. It's a pleasure. It can be a struggle, but it's a joy and a pleasure, and it's an artwork, it's a form, it's a creative discipline. If you're in an environment with a group of people where you don't feel safe, you don't feel valued, you don't feel equal, then that's not the environment you should be in. Find another group of improvisers.
Patty Stiles, thank you so much for being our guest on Improv Nerd. And there you have it. Another great episode of Improv Nerd is in the can. And I want to thank our guests all the way from Australia, Patty Stiles. Her book is Improvise Freely, Throw Away the Rule Book and Unleash Your Creativity. It is a really great book. And so please pick that up. Improvise Freely. I'd also like to thank my producer, Dan Schiffmacher. He's the one who makes me sound so slick and so professional. If it wasn't for Dan, you wouldn't be hearing my voice right now. Also, if you want to know more about me, Jimmy Corain, and my award-winning Artist Low comedy workshops, classes, online and in person, and my summer intensive coming in August, go to my website at jimmycorain.com and sign up to be on our mailing list, because I will send out notices about our new episodes when they go up, and I write a blog, and you can sign up for classes and workshops, and it's just a great way to connect. So do that. Also, we're on so many different social media platforms. I guess that's what the kids are calling it. We're on Facebook. We have an Improv Nerd Facebook page, so like it, because it really helps with my low self-esteem. We're on Instagram. It's Jimmy Corain. We're on Twitter, improv_nerd. We have a Patreon page. And please, if you like what we're doing here, please take a couple minutes out of your day and write us a really nice review on Apple, okay? I love Apple products. I want to get in with Apple for whatever reason. I would really appreciate it if you would do that. It would really make me feel good. So that's it. But before we go, I want to thank you for listening. And remember, walk, don't run.